celebrating the power of possibility. Heller and Hilton Hill presents
Anything is Possible Radio Edition.
Brought to you by Provision Cares Cancer Center, featuring proton therapy. One campus, one focus, cancer. Today's guest, Jeff Jernigan.
This is Anything is Possible. Great stories about great people, friends really, whose lives prove that anything is possible. And on many given Saturdays, you can hear his voice booming in Neyland Stadium. I get to hear his voice booming just about every day down the hallway.
That's true.
Jeff Jernigan, welcome to Anything is Possible.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be asked. I appreciate it.
Fulton High School. Mm-hmm. Growing up in that world, kind of take me back to the beginning of your life.
I was born at St. Mary's. I went to Lincoln Park, Christenberry, and Fulton, and then UT. They closed Lincoln Park. They tore Christenberry down. They tried to close Fulton. I tell them at UT all the time, you better watch your backside. They're trying to eliminate any history of me whatsoever. But I did. I went to Fulton High School, and it's really how I got into radio to begin with. I'd signed up for a vocational class, photography class. And one of my best friends at the time, Randy Miller, had said, you're such a cut-up. You're a class cut-up. You're in the office all the time for pulling pranks and doing all this kind of stuff. He said, they pay you to do that in radio. So I switched over to radio.
Now, Fulton had a little radio station.
Still does.
Still does to this day. So when you first went into the radio station at Fulton...
I was a little lost at first. And I think anyone who gets into radio, to some degree, the hardest part of being, I don't say good, but developed in radio is the phrase people will tell you, just be yourself. Just be yourself. And it sounds so easy.
Not easy.
Except when the light comes on. And the light comes on, and I think there's this inherent little piece of all of us inside, this little voice that says, I have to be bigger than who I am for people to want to listen. And you find out that's really not true. It's the ability to connect with people on some personal level, which I might say you're one of the best I've ever heard. I mean, you are phenomenal at doing that. You're a great storyteller, and by virtue of that, you connect with people.
Thank you.
And I never was that. I was more a quip, one-liner, that kind of thing. And that was really my persona on the air, and mainly because it's really who I am.
Right.
I mean, you know that about me. I mean, I'm a off-the-cuff type. I always have been. So that all got started at Fulton High School in the radio class. I mean, I remember one time we were giving out the main office number as the request line because we didn't have one.
And that's
the
funny.
Secretary here running funny. Down the hallway, stop it! People are calling the front desk. Yeah, I got in trouble for that. There's a few stories that I got in trouble for. We dubbed over some things and people would play them not knowing what was on them because it wasn't what it was labeled to be and things like that. So, yeah, we had a great time.
Tell me about your mom and dad.
They were both born in Newport, Tennessee. My dad drove a truck. He drove a steel truck for Tucker Steel. My mom was a beautician by trade, had a little shop in the house. And we grew up in North Knoxville over on Atlantic Avenue. And I had a happy childhood. I mean, my brother works as part of your group here on the show. And we had a great childhood, and I mean we're close. And both my parents have passed. My dad, when I was 12, just out of the clear blue, he had surgery and had a blood clot that went to his heart and took him overnight. So we woke up on a Sunday morning with an entire home full of people from our church standing around, and I'm waking up, and we were in twin beds, and I sat up, and then they tell us what's happened. And so that was rough. And then my mom really dedicated her life to raising Jerome and myself. And didn't date. I mean, her life really was about getting us to adulthood. and prayed many times. I can remember hearing her pray, just let me live long enough to get my boys raised. And I can honestly say that there have been periods during my life, even after, well after I was raised, that I believe the prayers that she said for me got me through some really rough times. And I will be eternally grateful for what she did for us. I mean, she had a seventh grade education.
Wow.
But I mean, she grew up at a time frame where when kids got a certain age, they went and worked in the fields up in, you know, in that area of the country. There were sharecroppers and all those kind of things. And, but I mean, she opened the shop back up in the house, took care of us. I don't know that we were ever, we certainly weren't well to do growing up, but I never felt like I was shorted anything,
right.
You know?
She made sure she provided.
Absolutely. And I certainly never questioned that we were loved. I'll tell you that. There was never a shortage of that.
Jeff Jarnigan is my guest. You're watching Anything is Possible.
Anything is Possible.
This episode of Anything is Possible is brought to you by Provision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer. Call 844-455-8600 for more information. This episode of Anything is Possible is brought to you by Provision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer. Call 844-455-8600 for more information.
So, Fulton High School, you find radio, you fall in love with radio. It becomes the perfect place for you to be who you are.
Yes.
Like, wow, I could be who I am and earn a living. So, you go to the University of Tennessee.
I went to
you were an athlete, though, too.
Oh, not at that level. I wasn't. I played baseball in high school, and I learned that the curveball was my problem. Throwing it and hitting it were both problems for me, and I found out fairly early on that talking about the sport rather than playing the sport was probably going to be my avenue. But, yeah, I got into radio. And then I went to WLIK in Newport. Well, my first job was WEZK.
Beautiful music.
Beautiful music. Once an hour, midnight to 8 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Beautiful music in full stereo, Easy 97, WEZK-FM, Knoxville. That was my whole career for a year and a half. That was the phrase I must have said. However many times you can multiply it out, 1,000 times maybe, that was all I ever said.
So first job, and then you go to Newport. Kind of walk me through your career.
I did. I was up there visiting some relatives, went by the radio station up there, and I'll just drop in and give them a tape. I drop them a tape. The next day they call and said, can you work 6 to midnight tomorrow night? Sure. So for about 2 years, I drove back and forth to work 6 to midnight after I got out of school.
What was next?
After that, I worked at WRJZ.
Yeah.
Which is a big top 40 station here. You know, Who's Got You Now was the catchphrase. And I worked there for a few years, and then I went to Montgomery, Alabama, which was a very odd experience. I don't know if you've been there. This was 1981 that I was there. I got off the air one day. This is how I knew I was going to leave. True story. Been there 3 months. And I'm walking down the street. I did 10 to 3, and I'm walking down the street, and there's an elderly African-American gentleman walking toward me. We approach each other like this. He steps off literally into the street to let me walk down the sidewalk.
Wow. I get it.
I take about 3 steps, and it suddenly hits me, what's happened? And I turned around, and I walked back to him, and I said, sir, I said, sir, and he turned around, and he was probably 75, 80 years old. And I said, why did you do that? And he said, I have to do that. And I said, not for me, you don't. And he said, you're not from here, are you? And I said, no, sir. And if that's how it is, I'm not going to be here long either.
Wow.
That was the day I decided I was leaving. I ended up leaving there with no job to come back to. It's just like I'm not raising my child. And I had a young son who's about a year and a half old. I'm not raising my child in this environment.
Where'd you go after that?
Moved back to Knoxville. Christmas Eve of 1981, drove a loaded U-Haul back to Knoxville. Excuse me. And didn't have a job for about a month, called around and called Gary Adkins, who was the program director at that time of WOKI. And about a week later, I guess, he called and he said, I've got a weekend shift if you want. I said, sure. So I drove out to Oak Ridge and did the weekend shift. I'm about an hour into it. He calls and says, do you want to do middays? They just had a morning person leave and some shifting going on. And so I'm halfway through my first part-time shift. He said, do you want to do middays? I said, sure. I didn't even ask what I was getting paid. I said, yeah, sure, I'm in. So about a month later, the afternoon person leaves. So I slide to afternoons. And about 3 months later, the morning guy leaves. I end up in the morning. And then I become program director of the station.
You've had leadership positions in radio throughout this market now. You've done a whole lot of stuff. Best and worst?
Best is that I really didn't have to bounce all over the country. You know, the friend of mine that actually talked me into getting into radio has been everywhere. I mean, Atlanta, Kansas City two or three times, Charlotte, San Diego. I mean, he's gone everywhere, and he's been hugely successful. I just never had the real interest to go do that. I enjoy it here. I like it here. This is home. So that's been what I've been the most fortunate about, I think, in my radio career. The worst part is, I guess, that my dad never saw what I grew up to be. Hmm. You know, I think we all kind of want our parents to be proud of us, and my mom got to see a lot of that, but my dad never did. And I'd like to think that he would be proud of who I became and how I became that and those kind of things. But what
do you think he would think of you being the voice of Neyland Stadium?
Wow, that's a good question. He wasn't a huge sports fan. He's a huge wrestling fan. He probably would have asked me if I could trade it in to do wrestling or something. I think he would be proud. I mean, he was proud of both of his sons. I mean, in that way, not sports-oriented, but I mean just very prideful about who we were. And he had a great sense of humor. He was a practical joker. I definitely get a lot of that from him. I mean, my mom was too. And I wish she could have seen some of what I became, but really my dad, because he, you know, I was 12 when he passed. So
I think one of the things that I like about you is you do have that great witty spirit about yourself, but when you walk in the room, at least for me, I believe we're going to win. I believe we got a chance to win. You have that force of personality that says we're going to do something here. We're not going to just wait. We're going to win. And when we come back, I want to talk about that spirit in you that makes you keep climbing and keep striving. Because the other thing that I've noticed about you is you like being a coach.
Always have.
Yeah, you like being a coach. We'll get to that in just a moment. This is Jeff Jarnagin. You're watching Anything Is Possible.
Anything is possible.
This episode of Anything Is Possible is brought to you by ProVision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer. Call 844-455-8600 for more information. This episode of Anything Is Possible is brought to you by ProVision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer.
Anything.
I have the ultimate lady of all with me, Pat Summitt.
Thank you, Howard.
Is the one and only Con Hunley.
Thank you, Howard.
Possible. Anything is possible.
This is Anything Is Possible, and this is Jeff Jarnagin. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
I mentioned you loving to coach. I've worked for a lot of people, worked with a lot of people, been around the industry a bit. And I remember the first day I came in your office, you were like, do stuff. Like, what? Yeah, just do stuff. I believe in you. Do any? No. Try. Go do stuff. And good days, bad days, you go, that didn't work. Try something else. Mm-hmm. But you love cultivating and coaching. And I'm watching the talent in our business, in our building. They're kind of going, what? This is great. Why are you like that?
Because that's how I liked to be treated. And I liked, I believe that everybody has a talent. I believe that everybody has a gift. I believe that everybody given the opportunity and the tools and the guidance has a chance. That doesn't mean they're all going to be great.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of great in people that never gets a chance to come out in some environments. As I said earlier, you're a great storyteller. There would be some people in this business as programmers that would say, yeah, that was a 3-minute story. You got to do that in 90 seconds.
Right.
Well, that's not the most impactful way for you to be who you are and to entertain listeners and then to entice listeners and to engage listeners. And that would be a disservice not only to you but to the listeners of the radio station.
It's fun believing that the people that are with you have your back, and I love that. Now, by happenstance, mm-hmm. though, you become the voice of Neyland Stadium. We both love, and I don't say loved, past tense, we both love Bobby Denton.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He's our guy, mm-hmm. right? How did you end up becoming the voice of Neyland Stadium?
I was in high school, and they tried to get me to get in the band. And I really had burned out on playing trumpet. I was one chair off being concert choir statewide or concert band statewide and all that, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. And Elvin Kenneth Banks, and I don't know if you know him, he's a great fella, and he asked me for 3 years to do it. Come back in the band, be in the band. And I said, I just don't have that passion anymore. And he said, would you be our announcer at halftime at Fulton games? Okay, I'll do that. And I was horrific. I mean, I was probably the worst in the history of high school PA ever. So I thought that's done, and I went on with my radio thing. Then I was at WOKI, and I get asked to co-host a video show when videos were really starting to come into their own. MTV was just starting out, and they were going to do a local one at a local TV station here, and Scott Sams was there. And I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be part of it. Don't make me do this. And finally they coerced or made me or threatened me, whatever. But anyway, I do it with Scott. So Scott and I do this show for about 2 years. Well, Scott is the PA announcer for the Tennessee Band, the Pride of the Southland Marching Band. Well, about 5 years after we finished doing this show together, he is gone to Dallas for Channel 4. And they need somebody to take over the band. So Scott gives them my name, says, you should talk to him. So they do. I start doing the band. I do that for 12 seasons. And I get a job offer in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to run 6 radio stations down there. And I end up taking it. And right as I'm getting ready to do that, I get a call asking me to be the PA announcer for UT basketball. And I said, I can't. I'm going to be in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So I'm gone for a little under 2 years, and I come back. I've been on the air one day on the air, and before my shift is over, the phone rings going, do you want to be the PA announcer for UT basketball? So we negotiate all that, and that plays out, and I do that for, Bruce Pearl's first game was my first game. So I guess that was 05, I believe, fall of 05. And then I do that, and I start doing the orange and white games because Bobby was living in Florida and coming back and forth at the time. And, yeah, that was great. And I got to know Bobby from doing the band sitting next to him in the press box. And we fought like cats and dogs for rating points during the week and listeners and all that. I mean, good-natured, and he was – but when we would sit in the booth on Saturdays, he was like your best friend.
Sure he was.
I mean, at halftime, he would go to the WIVK booth and come back with a creamsicle for me every week without fail.
That was him.
It was him. And the first game that I did against Utah State in 14, I got up at halftime to go to the restroom. And when I came back, there was an orange creamsicle laying there on the counter.
Wow.
And that was Ellen Liston.
Wow.
So, yeah.
When you think about possibility, like I said, when you walk in the room, I believe we're going to win. And your life.
We are going to win, by the way.
Right. but when you look at possibility, because this show is anything is possible, what have you learned about winning and possibility? What are the rules of the road?
the rules of the road, I believe, if you really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, are treating people with respect. First day I walked in the building over there, I will never forget sitting at the conference room table, and people are lined up all the way around it. And I said, working for me and with me is very easy. I don't raise my voice. I believe if I have to raise my voice or scream and yell or whatever to get anything done with somebody, either one, I'm not a very good manager, or two, I have the wrong employee. And that doesn't make them a bad person or wrong or anything else. I just believe that it's easier to work with people with mutual respect than it is the whole thumb on top of them. I never worked well myself as an employee in that environment, and I don't believe that's beneficial to employee or company. And I'm a believer in people, and that people give an opportunity and the tools and shown the logic of what the plan is. I mean, if I tell you or anyone else, just go do it, but I don't tell you why or what the goal is or the end product, it makes it really hard for you to execute, because half the time you're wondering, why in the world are we doing this? So I try to go out of my way in most instances where I can to elaborate on that and lay all that out, because I believe I want people to work as hard when I walk away as they do when I'm standing right over their shoulder.
I've often said that there's a big difference between what people are required to do and what they're inspired to do. Requirements are about minimums and checking boxes. Mm-hmm. Inspiration is no limits. And thank you for being the kind of leader that inspires, and thank you for making your mom and your dad proud. You got a big voice, but you got a bigger heart.
That's very kind of you to say. I appreciate that.
We'll see you next time on Anything Is Possible. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.